From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. It's Tuesday, December 5th, and sports fans, stick around after today's feature. I'll be talking a little UVM hoops following a stunning finish over the weekend. In the meantime, here are today's headlines. Governor Phil Scott has the highest approval rating of any governor in the country. That's according to the national polling firm Morning Consult, which conducts gubernatorial surveys quarterly. Their most recent survey, taken this fall, found Scott with an 84% approval rating. Matt Dickinson is a political science professor at Middlebury College, and he thinks Vermont voters are sending a clear message by providing Democrats with a huge majority in the legislature while electing a Republican governor.
The public can very much hold two views simultaneously, which is we appreciate the Democrats' efforts to increase access to health care, to extend spending on education. But we also want somebody to ensure that it's done in a fiscally responsible manner.
Scott has not yet announced whether he will run for a fifth term in office. He's expected to make a decision sometime in the spring. As communities across the state work to address drug-related crimes, Rutland County leaders point to their drug treatment court as a model for success. Under the program, people who plead guilty to criminal charges have the chance to go through rigorous substance use treatment instead of jail. Just over 380 people have taken part in the program since it launched nearly 20 years ago, and about 40% of them completed it. Ian Sullivan is Rutland County's state's attorney. Yesterday on Vermont Edition, he said the program's positive effects go beyond the numbers.
People are re-engaged in our communities. They're living productive lives, and they're members of the community. That's hard to measure in actual numbers, but it is a tangible human change that is overwhelmingly positive.
The other Vermont counties with drug treatment courts are Chittenden, Washington, and Windsor. The Vermont Truth and Reconciliation Commission shared its work publicly for the first time last week. The commission is tasked with establishing a public record of discrimination perpetuated by the state of Vermont and identifying potential actions to repair harm. Adam Kirsch is the lead researcher for the commission.
We're looking for particular instances of discrimination or oppression that have happened in the state, whether it's a particular court case, whether it's something that was in the news, or just something that someone has experienced that they feel like hasn't gotten adequate attention.
The examples Hirsch and his colleagues presented included discrimination during traffic stops, arrests, and sentencing. They also discussed restraint and seclusion practices in public schools, as well as inappropriate behavior by teachers. Finally, commission staffers presented examples of people impacted by the eugenics movement in Vermont. Coming up, a dream turned real for a Quebec man who sold Canadian Christmas trees in the city that never sleeps. That's after this. For four Decembers, Quebecois Marc-Antoine Goyette headed across the Canadian border with one destination in mind, a street corner in New York City. Once there, Marc-Antoine hand-built a wooden shelter to live in while he tried to stay warm and make a living selling fresh Christmas trees. He's the subject of the latest film in Vermont Public's Made Here series, now in its 18th season. Trick or Trees is a short documentary by filmmaker Simone La Rochelle. It's available to stream anytime at vermontpublic.org. And Marc-Antoine joined host Mary Engish to talk about his unique gig as a big city Christmas tree seller.
Welcome, Marc-Antoine.
Hello, hello.
Throughout this film, viewers do get to sort of follow you on that yearly trek to New York City. Can you sort of bring us along on what that journey was like?
Yeah. Okay, so it's kind of an adventure, which is a little bit why we do it. So the first thing to do is get a job and get a corner, which is not that easy because, well, let's face it, like the Christmas tree business is, it's a little bit like a mafia, okay? And you cannot just go there and do whatever you want. So the first thing there is to get a contact that will give you a corner. And then you need to cross the border, which is also a little bit like a gray zone because technically, well, we can't work in the United States because we don't have a working visa. But technically, we're not working. We're like volunteering, selling Christmas trees.
Once you have your street corner, tell us how you then sort of set up camp.
In the movie, you can see it's a camp that I built in two nights. I went to Home Depot and I found like insulation and wood a little bit everywhere, and I built like a pretty cozy shack, because the last year I went by train and I had no car at all.
In the film itself too, you do mention finding pleasure in extreme conditions, which this sort of sounds like, right? Well, what drew you to this sort of work, being outdoors in the bitter cold?
Yeah, well, I feel like it's a little bit like people doing Ironmans or stuff like that. I don't understand them. I'm like, why would you run like 200 kilometers? This sounds so dumb to me. But at the same time, for us, it's a little bit the same thing. There's some kind of you kind of feel alive of doing such a weird and extreme job where you need to be self-sufficient on food, on the heat, on, well, actually your rooftop. It's cold, but it makes you really alive. And I feel it's the same feeling as, I don't know, adventures. Like I feel like people doing some crazy stuff, they share that feeling of feeling really, really alive doing those stuff. But the worst is actually managing people for 40 days on the side of a street. This is pretty intense. This is where it gets really tricky.
You said managing people on the sidewalk is the intense part?
Yeah, it is. It's usually in a day you'll meet up a few dozen people, and half of the time you choose them, like you choose to meet with them. But when you live on the side of the street in New York City, you basically, you meet thousands of people a day, and you never ask for it. Like, this is, you're just there. So you're kind of seeing everything going on, which depends where your corner's at. It can get really hard.
What are some of the best parts of that job when you were doing it?
As I said in the movie, there's a privilege of bringing happiness to homes. It's just joy. There's few jobs where you actually bring happiness to people. And I worked in the Bronx and I worked in Manhattan, which are two different experiences. But both of the times, the answer is the same. Like, people are happy. You come with the Christmas trees. You're kind of a mythical, folkloric creature, like Christmas elf, bringing them like holidays, which is super fun, super fun.
The viewer sort of gets to see you having that front seat interacting, as you said, with sometimes, you know, 1,000 people walking along the street corner. What do you think that perspective sort of granted you?
I would say it gave me a lot of empathy. And it never happens that you can meet so much different people in their intimacy. I don't know any other job you can do that. So yeah, I would say it gave me a lot of empathy and sensitivity.
We got to see your glimpse into your work life selling Christmas trees. What does the future hold for you now, though? What are you up to?
I just do what I love now, which is working in art and working for festivals. But I do miss selling Christmas trees a lot.
Can you come back if you ever wanted to? Could you just cross the border again and maybe do it for one season or something?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I thought about it. I thought about it this year. But the thing is, well, doing Christmas trees kind of take a chunk of 3 months in your life, which is like very difficult after that to get into like a normal schedule or something like that.
Well, this was so cool. I loved getting this sort of behind the scenes look at this really unique job. Thank you so much for sharing more about selling Christmas trees in New York City. And I was glad to be able to have a chance to talk with you.
Oh, I'll come back, I promise. And then again, I would say to all of you, my fellow neighbors, don't try it. It's too hard. let it to the professionals.
I love that. That's good advice.
That's host Mary Engish speaking to Marc-Antoine Goyette. You can watch the short documentary featuring Goyette, Trick or Trees, as part of our Made Here Local film series. It's available to stream anytime at vermontpublic.org. And finally, a note on a sports event that happened over the weekend. For those who missed it, it really is worth recounting the unbelievable finish to the men's college basketball game between Yale and the University of Vermont at Patrick Gym Saturday night. the Catamounts trailed the Bulldogs 65-62 with less than 1 second left in the game. And Yale had possession of the ball, needing just to inbound and have the clock take care of the rest. But Yale got careless underneath their own basket, getting called for an offensive foul on a UVM defender, and that turned the ball over to Vermont. Still, there was literally less than a second, 0.6 to be exact, left on the clock. So it would take an inbound and immediate catch-and-release shot from three-point distance for UVM to tie the game and send it to overtime. What happened next was an even better outcome for the Catamounts and one of the most astonishing finishes to any college game in recent history. The ball was inbounded to UVM's TJ Long, who got the shot off in time and from beyond the three-point arc. And not only that, he was fouled in the process by a Yale defender. But would the ball go in? Yes, it would. Off glass and good, with now just 0.3 seconds left in regulation. Did he call the bank shot? We may never know. But with the score now tied at 65 apiece, Long had a chance to seal the miraculous win with the free throw that came with the foul. And this time, he didn't need the bounce off the glass. It was all net on the free throw, putting UVM ahead 66-65, which would be the final score, as Yale's attempt at a half-court Hail Mary fell way short, and pandemonium erupted from the sold-out home crowd at Patrick Gym. The Catamounts improved to 7-2 with the victory, and they sit atop the America East standings in the biggest shot that a player named TJ has hit for UVM since TJ Sorrentine nailed the three-pointer that put Vermont ahead for good in their upset win over Syracuse in the first round of the NCAA tournament back in 2005. And let this stand as a reminder to all the pessimists out there, yours truly included, that even if you think your team has no chance at pulling out a victory, if the boundaries of time, however small, and the circumstances allow, anything, no matter how improbable, is still possible in the world of sports. Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Bob Kinzel, Michaela Lefrak, and Lexi Krupp. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelin, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Talk to you tomorrow.